So it was difficult initially to try to find a way in Chinese to express some of these Sanskrit ideas. Chinese also had nothing that corresponded to the complex psychological analysis in traditional Buddhism. All the different ways of dividing up the personality or dividing up the process of enlightenment into so many stages. That level of complexity simply didn't exist in Chinese civilization and was foreign to Chinese ways of thought. And more importantly, Chinese social values emphasized the family and the local community. They weren't as concerned as the Buddhists were with universal systems of values, and they weren't as focused as the Buddhists were on the rejection of the family in order to achieve an individual ideal of salvation. Now, the earliest Buddhist translators and missionaries in China tried to deal with these problems in different ways. Sanskrit and Chinese terms often were matched with one another, so people would try to pick out of the language of Chinese philosophy or of Chinese culture a term that might roughly correspond to some Sanskrit term, so that key Buddhist ideas could be matched with ideas that already were familiar to Chinese audiences. Often in the process, as you can imagine, offensive ideas sort of get dropped. You know, there's some funny little wrinkle in traditional Indian Buddhism that just isn't going to fit with a Chinese audience. Out it goes. Just drop it. And on the other hand, aspects of the Indian tradition that were congenial to Chinese tastes tended to rise in prominence. This is a process, actually, it's very interesting to observe. When we were talking about the Bodhisattva back in our initial discussion of Indian Mahayana Buddhism, I mentioned a Bodhisattva by the name of Vimalakirti, a layman, lived the life of a layman, and also managed to bring into his ordinary lay life a profound understanding of emptiness and the teaching of the Buddha. Now, the truth is, there are lots of Bodhisattvas in Indian literature. There are tons of them. I could have selected out of that vast literature all sorts of people to focus on, but I plucked out Vimalakirti in part because that's one of these characters that the Chinese focused on. He's one of the people that they plucked out because he embodied for them precisely that combination of familial virtue, respect for community, embeddedness within the social order, and also at the same time a sense of wisdom and freedom and understanding of the truths that are expressed in the awakening of the Buddha. So Vimalakirti loomed large in the development of Chinese Buddhism. Now, as we look at the adaptation of Buddhism in China more generally, one of the key factors that made it possible for Buddhism to move as effectively and sympathetically into the Chinese cultural world as it did was a close relationship between Buddhism and the indigenous Chinese religious tradition of Taoism. As the Han Dynasty disintegrated, Chinese intellectuals often turned for their inspiration to the Taoist tradition. Taoism was comparable in its antiquity to the tradition of Confucius, and it often represented an opposite pole in Chinese thinking to the Confucian tradition with its active emphasis on public virtue and family values. In contrast to the active public character of Confucianism, Taoism advocated a strategy of inactivity, of withdrawal from the world, and contemplation. You can imagine that the Buddhists would have found this very congenial and very familiar. The Taoist way, or the Tao, was down to earth, it was natural, it was harmonious, and it was inexpressible in words. Was something that had to be discerned, as it were, experientially in particular situations, rather than being expressed by broad conceptual distinctions. You can get a taste of Taoist teaching, and I think you can begin to sense the kinship between Taoism and Buddhism. If I simply read a few passages from the Tao Te Ching, one of the fundamental texts of the Taoist tradition, I'll read a couple of these passages and comment on them. We can think about them together. Chapter 1, the very first statement in the Tao Te Ching is one that's perhaps familiar to you. The Tao that can be told of is not the eternal Tao. The name that can be named is not the eternal name. The nameless is the origin of heaven and earth, and the named is the mother of all things.